Wow, there's a lot of people here. So this is the time when Bart was going to give a talk, but he was not feeling well, so I'm filling in for him. This is not the same talk as Bart was going to give, so just if you're here to see Bart and his talk, that's not what we're talking about right now. We're instead going to talk about Visual Studio extensibility. My name is Mads Christensen. I work at the ASP.NET team, and I have absolutely nothing to do with Visual Studio extensibility. In this session, I am just an enthusiast. I did, however, build a lot of extensions. I built five, actually. Web Essentials, you might have heard of. I did a version of Web Essentials for 2010. It didn't have as many features, but it's out there. Web Standards Update for 2010. Image Optimizer, and CSS Cop. And that's more than 860,000 downloads. Now, the reason why I'm telling you this is not to look cool or anything. It is merely because if an idiot like me can build extensions for Visual Studio with this many downloads, then you can definitely do the same. That's basically all it is. So it's actually really, really fortunate that I got to do this session for you because, first of all, it's not something that we normally talk about, right? If you go to any conference, Visual Studio extensibility is never a topic, which is very, very sad. And we're actually in the ASP.NET team, we're actually trying to make this story a lot better. So even though we don't own the extensibility parts of Visual Studio, all of our stuff we're trying to open up. So the CSS editor has, for instance, a complete extensibility model that's really, really fantastic. And we're building a new HTML editor right now. It's going to have the same great story. But we do other stuff as well. We have some new template support for MVC that makes it really easy to write project templates for the new project MVC dialog. So it is actually pretty good because now I can tell you this story. So I've never given this talk before. I was asked to do this yesterday afternoon. And I spent this evening come up with some ideas for what we could take a look at. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to have fun, right? I have never done this before, so we'll see how it goes. But basically, the idea is that we're going to create a V6. V6 is an extension package. And V6 stands for Visual Studio something. Then we're going to add some actual useful features. We're not going to do just demo for the sake of demoing. We're not going to do, hey, getting started, you have to, this is getting started, and then that's it, end of story. We're actually going to build some real useful features. And then we're going to publish it to the gallery so that anyone in the world can install it. So I can show you how that works. Now, I hope that we are able to do that. I am not connected to the internet. I'm still trying, and I'm hoping that the wireless will kick in. So this is what we're going to do at the end anyway, so they might have fixed it in 45 minutes to an hour. And then we're going to look at Web Essentials. So I brought with me the code for Web Essentials, so we can kind of look at that, see how that was built. You will notice the complete lack of unit tests, but that's okay. And I hope that you just feel free to ask me any question as we go along. I do, in all the extensions that I've built, I kind of touch upon most of the stuff in Visual Studio. So I do have a pretty broad knowledge on all the different extensibility points. So feel free to ask any questions. Okay. So, Visual Studio. We need one thing to be able to write extension. Well, we need two. We need Visual Studio. And then we need the Visual Studio SDK, which is a free download from MSDN. Just search for it. Search for Visual Studio 2012 SDK, and then what you then will get is this: file new project, extensibility, and then you have all these items. So that's what you get from the SDK. If you don't have the SDK and you try to open a Visual Studio project that's an extensibility project, Visual Studio don't know what it is. It will just say, I can't open the project. So you need the SDK even just to look at the code in Visual Studio. And we can choose from a lot of different things. Right? There is the Visual Studio package, which doesn't really say much, we can do some item templates. An item template is add new item C# file. When you say add new item and you choose C# file, that's an item template. It's not an empty file, if you've noticed. It actually comes with some using statements, some important namespaces, and so on. Project template is file new project. Editor classifier, this is the one where if you want to write a new language support, let's say you want to write PHP support in Visual Studio, you want to dig into editor classifier. A margin. Actually, I use a margin for, if you've seen Web Essentials, if you use Less or CoffeeScript, it has this preview window. It's actually WPF that I shove into the margin where you have the scroll bar. So you want to use one of those. Text adornment, that's small little glyphs. Like I have the in CSS, that little color icon next to hex values is a text adornment. Viewport, that is the editor window. That's the viewport. So I don't know exactly what this does. V6 project. Now we're going to build a V6, right? So here's the thing. None of these templates tells you what to choose, what the limitations are, or what the possibilities are. So this is a theme that you're going to see over and over again if you want to build extensions. The help in Visual Studio is not super great. So we want to create a package. You always want to create a package unless you're really, really certain of what you're doing. Package is the big one. That is the one where you can do anything you want. And typically, when you start writing an extension, you might not actually know what the end result is going to be because it's new and you want to add new features and so on. So a package allows us to interact with the toolbars. We can add buttons and so on to right-click menus and to toolbars and whatnot. That's what the package does. It lets us also write stuff to the registry and so on. So let's always do the package. It gives us the most flexibility. Let's just call this tech days. There we go. And now we get a wizard here. Let me zoom in. What do you want to do? Well, I want to use C# and just generate a new key. That's all fine. Company name. Let's just use my name. And we can all this stuff we can edit afterwards. And now what do we want to do? I always click menu command. Custom editor, that's the one we had before where it says editor classifier, and we can build a PHP editor. So you can see this one just out of the box kind of enables all those other templates. But we're going to do a menu command just to kind of get a feel of how that works. And I've never done anything but that. So Web Essentials, when I said file new project, I chose menu command. And it doesn't matter in this case. Unit test. No. Okay, so now we get our extension, and this is what it looks like. There's a lot of files, and most of them are ceremony, most of them are just plumbing. But let's actually run this. So this is interesting. How do you run an extension that you're building? Well, how do you run any other thing? You just click debug, or well, in my profile, I use just Control F5 or F5, right? So I'm just going to Control F5. So run it without debug. And you see it actually starts another version of Visual Studio. And if we look in extensions and updates, we can see that TechDays is now installed. So just by hitting F5, we're kind of inside what's called the experimental instance of Visual Studio. So you might have heard about the experimental instance. There are two instances of Visual Studio. There's the one and only that we all know and use every day. And then there's the experimental. And they're the same, but they live in different places in the registry. So all your settings, like all the stuff that goes in the registry, are in two different places, one for the real version of Visual Studio and one for the experimental. So they don't clash, they don't conflict, which is really nice. And it had this menu command, right? And it was called my command name, and it's right here. There we go. Actually, I have two. It's probably because I rehearsed this. Yes, let's get rid of this. This is the old one. Let's just uninstall this. So now we're up and running. Now we can see our extension is working. I clicked the button and something happened. It showed me a little bit of text. And this is what it looks like. This is my file. This is my package file. TechDays package, which inherits a package. And here is my initialize. This is where everything happens. So this we don't care about. But here, now it gets funny. This is where we look at the menu item that I was adding. And we hook it up to a callback, menu item callback, which we have down here, which basically just shows the message box. So this is just boilerplate example code. Now, we have some more stuff going on here, because the button is in the VSCT file, Visual Studio Command Table. And this is just XML, but here's our button, my command name. I can call this whatever I want. And then we have some images. They need to be registered out here as well. And you see that image or icon is referenced from my button. So that's why my button has this little icon. And then at the end, we have our GUIDs or our symbols. And this is where it gets a little bit hairy. You need to kind of register everything like a couple of times. But it is very, very flexible as well. You can do all your key bindings, all everything on the individual buttons and so on. You can do that from here. You can do your flyout menus and so on. So this is one of the most, for me, it was one of the most difficult things to kind of get to know. It's, for me, it's difficult and still is today to kind of have everything working the first time I do it. So if I want to add a button somewhere, it usually takes a little bit longer because it's a little bit trial and error. But there are actually some good resources online for this specific things. That is probably the only resource you're going to find that's really good online, unfortunately. So that was our command. We're not going to use this today, actually. This is where you, if you have any UI elements, buttons, and so on, it all goes in here. That's not what we're going to do. We can, if you want to, we can, and we have time, we can, of course, we can do that. But here's a funny thing. This is the V6 manifest. And it has this nice little designer. So here I can fill out my license, all these things. Preview image, and all these images will be shown in the extension and update dialog. They will be on the Visual Studio Gallery as well. Installed targets. So this determines where my extension can go. Visual Studio Pro, that means Pro is the minimum. That means it also works in Premium and Ultimate. But I can also do one for the integrated shell. You're never going to do that. And then we have all the Express versions. So VWD, that's the Web Express. I have no idea what this is. VPD, anyone? What is this? The phone? Okay, so this is the Phone Express. And Windows 8, and I have no idea what this is. And then we have the Windows. So you can kind of target where do you want these things to work. And here is where it gets really funny. Express versions of Visual Studio do not allow extensions. So this is completely useless. You just always want to leave it at Pro. And trust me, I've tried to talk to the Visual Studio team and make them lift the band, but there are some politics going on and they cannot do it, unfortunately. So you can only target Pro and up. Then we have our assets. So what type of stuff do we want to include in our package? And the one we have right here is the package itself, which is basically pointing to the project and the solution. And this means that all the XML you saw before is all going to be loaded, but we need something else because we have something called MEF. So I'm going to add another one here. I'm going to choose a MEF component, and it is the same project. It's, again, the templates here are not maybe super much up to date because why wouldn't you do this automatically? And dependencies, we're just going to leave that alone. I've never ever changed anything in here. So that's all we need to do. Now we have our MEF working. And MEF is our extensibility. MEF is really, really difficult to kind of understand to begin with. It was for me anyway, because I can extend Visual Studio without kind of writing or take dependencies on Visual Studio. It's kind of weird. Visual Studio automatically picks up my classes and just executes them. So we're going to take a look at how that works. So what we want to do is steal some code that I have prepared. So let's just add a folder. Paste these guys in. All right. So if I open this guy, let me just clean the output here, and we run in debug, I believe. So now there's nothing in here, and I'm going to build. Let's see what actually happens. Oh, yeah. So here's another funny thing, and you're going to see this all the time. The default project template, file new project v6 package, does not contain all the references you need. It is really, really stupid. So we need to do that automatically, but of course we're told what we're needing to do here. So we're going to add some references. So one of the one we're adding is this one. See, I have them in recent. Very easy that way. Those are the ones you need. I should probably write a blog post about this. But here we go. And I think there is one more. Yes, there is one more. And that is browse. Okay, so here's the trick. Let me just zoom in here. So if we go into the Visual Studio, so program files, Visual Studio, Common IDE, extensions, Microsoft, web tools, paste JSON as classes, because that's we're kind of going to use that. We can actually see all the different features. So this is just what's in the latest web tools update 2012.2 that came out 10 days ago. You can see it has a lot of different stuff. It has the languages. Maybe there is less and other stuff in here that's fully extendable. The answer is yes. This is completely unsupported, but we have all the DLLs. Most of the stuff is public, so you can actually party on all of it. You just need to figure out where it is, because most of this is undocumented. So we're going to use JSON. So we're going to take this guy. Let's build. Yay, build succeeded. And now we can see that we have in our output here, we have some new files. Look at this. That's the V6. I can take this V6 and send to any of you on email or whatever, and you just double-click it, and you install it into your own Visual Studio, and that's it. That's how you can distribute your own extension. It's super, super simple. If we're lucky and we get the internet going, we're going to go through how to actually publish it on the Visual Studio Gallery, which is ridiculously easy. But this is basically all you need. If I double-click it, do you want to install? No. Okay. So, yeah, by the way, I can't really see you for all the light, so if you have any questions, just shout. Okay? Okay, so let's actually build some code. So I was struggling yesterday figuring out exactly what to build because there's really endless possibilities, right? But the idea, of course, is one of the things that really annoys me, I have Web Essentials. So everything that annoys me about Visual Studio, I kind of just put in Web Essentials. That's how I do that. And I'm sure there's things that you find annoying, like why does it behave this way, or why can I not do, X, Y, C? So I was sitting at the hotel yesterday, and I was talking to a guy, and he said, well, let's do some SAML stuff. And that's what I have here. So now we're going to look at some meth, and you cannot see what I'm doing. I'm sorry. There we go. Hope that's better. Should it be, can you see in the back? Should it be higher, bigger font? Okay, a little bit bigger. Yeah, we can do that. Okay, so this is the magic of meth. And I'm sure that some of you have seen it, but basically what we're doing here with these attributes, that's how we communicate with meth. And I'm going to create a meth export. And that's where the export at the top comes in. I'm going to export a type of eyedrop handler provider. Because that's exactly what I want to do. I want to be able to drag and drop some stuff. Actually, let's just run this and see that it does work, because then it's probably easier to figure out what the code does. So I got it right here. So here's just some SAML. And if I drag in an image, which I have right here, what SAML does, the SAML editor, it will not do anything. It will just print out a string of the file path to this image. And that's not really helpful. What's really helpful, if I drag in an image, it should create an image tag in SAML, right? That's what we've been doing for CSS. If you drag in an image, it creates a background image property or an image tag in HTML. So why doesn't it do that for SAML? So let's just see whether or not I've done good here. I have. And you can't see this. All right, so we actually get the image, and we also get the height and the width. Okay? That is coming from this extension. So let's see how it works. First of all, this is hairy. This is where you need the documentation. You need to go online. This is when you build extensions, it's completely search-driven development. Right? You're basically living in Google and in Bing and you pulling out your hairs. Why can't I find documentation? It's there, but you have to look really hard. And here we have something interesting. So we're going to export my iDrop Handler provider. This is a Visual Studio interface. And by exporting it, something within Visual Studio, which I don't know where is and I don't care, they have an import of iDrop Handler providers. So any iDrop Handler providers that exist in all the packages installed in Visual Studio, that import function will get them all. And that's why we have the order attribute saying, okay, this has to be executed before something else, and we're going to set it before the default file drop handler. Now, these are magic strings. There's no way you can find this out unless you find it online. That's how it is. And the drop format is this weird thing, CF_VSST something. Again, magic, find it online. This basically just means if I drag a file from Solution Explorer, then the format is CF something. It makes absolutely no sense. Another drop format is file drop. So if you drop in a file from Windows Explorer, for instance, you can catch that in here as well. And then we're going to give it a name. And we're going to tell it what content type we want this to work in. I can write everything here. So. This is the part that's actually good, because we can, even though it's magic string, it's a SAML, it's natural. It's what you would think it is. If it's CSS, the content type is CSS, and HTML is HTML. JavaScript is JavaScript. C# is C#, but it's spelled SHARP. But it's what you would expect, right? So that part is actually pretty neat. Okay, so that's my internal class that implements my iDrop Handler provider, and that's the one I'm going to expose. It gets a view. A view is the actual editor window. That's the view. The view itself does not contain any code. It doesn't contain anything. One of its properties, the text buffer, does, but we're given the view, the parent. And then we're just going to tell the view, hey, create a singleton property for the stylesheet drop handler. You see, I call it stylesheet here. Obviously, I've used it for something else. So it basically creates a new stylesheet drop handler. And because I do it this way, I could just have done this. Return new stylesheet drop handler, end of story. That would work too. But by doing this, I'm kind of using the view. So that means that whenever the document closes and the view is disposed, it will dispose all of its properties. So this is just like a nice way of doing it. So that's all it does. You open the view, and a new stylesheet drop handler is created. And this is an iDrop handler, and the interface looks like this. First of all, is drop enabled? You can return true, false. Maybe you want to make sure that whatever you take the image and you drag it in, and you want to make sure that whatever you're hovering over, that it's valid to put the image right there. There could be situations where it's invalid. So what I'm doing here is basically I'm getting my I'm checking if there is data in what's being dragged in, and I'm getting the text. And in this case, I always kind of get the the full absolute file name. And then basically, it's pretty simple. I just check for if the file name exists. And if it does, get the extension. Is it a .png, .gif, and so on? And then I just return whether or not that extension is valid in my image extension collection here. Right? So I say PNG, JPEG, GIF, and BMP. And that just returns true or false when things are dragged in. Then we have handle dragged over. We're not going to do anything. And drag started, not doing anything, except setting like a property saying, OK, what are we going to, what is the cursor going to look like? And it has this pointer effect that says all, which I have no idea what is, but yeah. And then when I actually do the drop, this is where I go in and I have a file helper that makes me find the relative path between the file path of the document that's open right now, the SAML document, and then that image file name, both of which are absolute. So I have a helper method that will find what the relative difference is and only use the relative path. But you can see here, it kind of gets a little bit hairy now. We find the views text buffer, and then the properties of the text buffer contains an iText document that has the file path. There are other ways you can get to this, but this is the best way I have found. Again, this is not really documented. You have to kind of look at a lot of sample code to learn all these things. And basically what I'm doing is I'm just taking a bitmap frame, which is part of WPF, and find the height and the width. And then I use string format to put everything in here. So that's how that works. But so I already coded this, right? But as I'm coding it, I want to debug. So how does that work? So let's set a breakpoint. And then hit F5. There we go. Okay, so the breakpoint here is drop enabled. That means as soon as I start dragging or dropping, one of the two. So I'm going to take this guy, pull it in, I let go of the mouse, and here we go. And I can just debug like any other thing. I can do, what is that, F10? Go through, see what everything is here. So this is my absolute path. Continue down. And my file extension is .png. So I'm just going to do F5 and run it. Nothing happened because I didn't actually do a drop. So my drop up here didn't work. So I'm going to remove my breakpoint and set it here instead. I'm going to do it again. There we go. And we have the relative path. And we can insert into the text buffer. So that's how you interact with the editor. You find the text buffer. And it's not really a string builder, but it has some similarities. You can kind of replace, remove, insert strings into the text buffer. And that's what we're going to do here. We're just inserting. And I'm figuring out at what position should I insert. Well, in this case, it's where you actually dropped your file, right? And then we're just going to do string format. So that's just F5. And we can see that we now have it working right here. Right? There we go. So that's an example of a really, really, really simple but very useful extension, I think. Do you have any questions to the magic? Okay. So in Web Essentials, we have, I think I have 4 or 5 of these. And as you can see, one of them is for Stylesheet, hence the name Stylesheet. I didn't change the name here. So, that was number one. Then number two, let's take a look at that. And I need to find some JSON for it. Let's see. Just see if I'm online. Oh, I actually have the code. It's not in there. So if you saw, did I show that yesterday? I don't know. Paste JSON as classes is a feature that that started its life in Web Essentials that's now built into the Web Tools update. And it allows you to copy JSON and paste it as C# or Visual Basic. So that's really, really useful if you want to deal with, doesn't work, okay. If you want to deal with JSON and REST APIs. So let's just find some JSON. I'm sure it's here somewhere. Okay, never mind. We're just going to write it. So that's what I have here in my other file called TypeScript. Because what I want to do now is I want to say, I want to have some JSON that I've copied into my clipboard, go to TypeScript editor, and say paste as classes. Now I can't actually, in this case, I cannot change the name of the menu item. So it has to be paste JSON as classes. But what I want to do is I want to paste it in as TypeScript interfaces. Okay, so that's what I have here. So let's just see if it works before we dive into the code. So here I have a TypeScript file. So let's write some JSON. Gonna copy this guy. And now I should have paste JSON, or paste special, paste JSON as classes. And you see here we get an object. Did you see what happened? So this is my very, very simple JSON. It's a number menu. I can have, I can spell correctly, first of all. I can do menu. I can do, let's do a header. I don't think I need these, actually. Header, and the header is a string. All right, so. String. I'm going to copy this and then just say paste special, and here we go. Okay? So now I can start using this interface in my JSON. And we're going to do this. So the experimental instance is a little bit difficult. There, if you install an extension, it does not necessarily pop up in the experimental instance, and I have yet to figure out when they pop up in both places and when they don't. So let's do this. Here we go. So now we have our interface. So that seemed pretty simple. So let's take a look if it actually was simple. Well, here we go. So again, I'm using Meth. I'm exporting an iPaste JSON code generator. And I'm registering it for the TypeScript content type. Again, that's easy. If I was writing it for JavaScript, I would just write JavaScript right there. And this is a really, really cool interface. Basically, what's the start class? Well, that's the interface. And a property is just very, very simple. I have the property name followed by the property type name, number, string, boolean, so on. And it needs it a little bit of repetition here. And then we are dealing with arrays as well. So that's all there is to it. Here I have my mapping. What does certain types actually map into in my language, in this case TypeScript? That takes up almost half the code. So very, very small class. You'll find a lot of very, very small classes like this that does some really cool stuff. The older the API is that we're using, the worse it gets. I don't know what they were thinking back then, but there's some really hairy stuff going on. But all the new stuff, all the stuff that came in like in 2010 and 2012, is like really, really super good and really easy to use. And actually, what I have here, I took the actual implementation that we use for the C# version, which is in the box. So I have access to that code. Unfortunately, you don't, but I have, and this is what I based it on. I'm going to take all this code and make it available so you can take a look at it as well. So let me try this interwebs again. Just for the fun of it. Because we now actually have a real-world extension that does some stuff that's actually pretty cool. And it was fairly easy. That is not a lot of C#. That's not even 200 lines total, I think. Okay. So, yeah, it looks like I'm not able to actually send this anywhere out to the gallery. So let's talk about the gallery instead. We were going to do that anyway. But here's my manifest. So, what is the mechanism of doing all this stuff? When I release my V6 into the gallery, I basically just upload it. It's very, very simple. You go into the gallery, you say upload new control or tool, and then it just gives you like an input field where you kind of select what file you want, you find it on your hard drive, and you upload it. And then you need to fill in a little description. Right? It has to have 260 characters or something like that so you can kind of describe what's going on. And that's it. End of story. It's really, really super simple. But what happens then when you want to update your V6? So we start with version 1. Right? We don't do version 0 point something. That's for amateurs, right? We have confidence. We do 1.0. We want as many people to download our stuff as possible. So first version, even though it's crap, it's going to be called 1.0. We're confident. So I'm going to release 1.1 a week later. How do I do that? Very simple. You basically just change this to 1.1. And you can go, you can't write anything you want in here, like this. See the complaints, but you can do like the full version type of things here, so you can be very specific. And then we can start filling out our stuff. So we can start filling out our information. We have a license, which is a file somewhere. Text file, icon. We always want the icon to show up the right place. We want it to show up exactly here, right? This icon you see out here. Preview image and so on. We want to fill in all this stuff. If you have a website that supports your site, put it in here. Every time, if you have something in here in the more info URL, I don't actually remember if it's the more info or getting started, but if you have a URL in one of them, every time someone installs your V6 or updates it, a browser is opened and you're going to be taken to that page. So that's really cool if you have a change log. Now, what changed between the version you had and the new version? You can just direct people there. But now you have your 1.1. You go back into the gallery. You log in with your Windows Live account or Microsoft account or whatever it's called nowadays. And you now have an edit button on the gallery page. Just say edit, and then you can say upload new version. And you do the same thing again. You just pick the new version, the V6 file, and you upload it, and that's it. And it just says, well, you're going to lose all your data. And you say, oh, damn. And then you click OK, I need to update anyway. And you're not losing any data at all. So it's a completely wrong error message or warning they give you. You're not going to lose anything. It says, hey, you're going to lose all your description, all that stuff that you have written on the page. That's not the case. That's not true. So you do this, and then everyone that has your extension installed will now have an update. So this one will light up. They will get a little toast notification down at the corner right side. It will pop up, say, hey, there's an update to Visual Studio. So that's the way you can kind of alert people. You don't have to do any of that. Visual Studio takes care of it. And it goes out in the gallery and figures out whether or not there's a new version or not. So that's very automated and very, very easy to deal with. The real problem is not getting your extension out there. It's actually writing the extension. Any questions before we get into Web Essentials? No. Okay. So I take it that you understand everything about creating a V6 and you're going to go home and publish one tonight. Is that right? Question? Yes. Question is, what about settings? If I want to store settings that the user can set. I had a big problem with that until I figured out how easy it is. Let me demonstrate. So that actually does take us into to Web Essentials, which is right here. Let's just get Okay, so what does settings look like? I call them options. And let's look at here. So I have a class that inherits from dialog page. Okay. Dialog page is something that's in Visual Studio, or it's a WPF. I think it might be WPF. No, it's a Visual Studio thing. You just inherit from this, and then you ignore all this goop that I have right here, and then you just do this. This is a setting. This is a Boolean. Enable CSS selector highlight. And then you can give it a category, a description, and the actual name that you want to have it displayed as. And without doing anything, like I can delete everything above this, all this stuff right up here. This is because the way Web Essentials works is that I save the settings in a solution file sometimes. So I have my own logic there. But I think, actually, I don't have to. I think that that sort of stuff is also supported. But just by having these, automatically, automatically, this is going to be created. So you get this grid view. This is so the new in the next version of Visual Studio, the CSS and HTML editor will use this format, by the way. But it's the one that comes for free. So it's super, super simple, and it knows, oh, it's a Boolean, then it adds true false. Oh, it's a string. Well, then I let people type in a string. So that's really handy. The only thing we need to do is to go to our package. So this is our main package. The default file that's created, we had one, the one we had in here was this guy, right? Where we have our initialize, it inherits from the package. So we have one in here that does the same. And I just have to do this. Provide option page, type of general options, or I think we were dealing with CSS options. Where does it live? It lives in the Web Essentials node under CSS. So that's what we're just looking at right here. Web Essentials, CSS. These numbers, I have absolutely no idea what they mean. And then we can add keywords. Minify, minification, W3C, CSS3. Why is that interesting? Because I can now say W3C. Okay? So you can do a lot of stuff here. But yes, this is Web Essentials. As you can see, we don't deal with unit tests here. It's just going to slow us down. So Web Essentials is my little pet project that I started to test the extensibility of the Visual Studio things that we were doing in the web team. So for the CSS editor, JavaScript, and HTML, mainly CSS. And then it kind of just went nuts after that. So there's a lot of stuff in here. And let's see here. Most of it is the same thing. Most all of it is actually the exact same thing as the one we just did. Oh, the getting started guide. This is the one that's actually popping up when you install this V6. And I have made the mistake of mixing the more info. It's the change log I want to hit every time you install Web Essentials, but I made a mistake here. But here you can do everything. You can set your tags. That's what you can search for in the gallery and in the extension dialog. If you go to Tools and Extensions, you can search for any of these things, including in the description, including all of the stuff up here. So that part is very similar. Install targets, the same thing as before in our previously extension. Assets. So these two are the same. Here's my package, and here's my MEF components. The MEF component was the one we added before. I have one additional one. I'm actually registering a VS package. So a VS package is an interesting thing. It contains how I can control the registry. And it knows exactly where to write to the registry. I don't have to kind of deal with that. I just need to put relative paths in this file, and here's what it looks like. Here we go. So here is a register key. But you see it just has this root key on top. Visual Studio figures out what's the root, what is the hive on which to write these things. And if we dissect our V6, so let's go into the V6 that we created before. A V6, so this is 61 kilobytes, it says over here. A V6 actually is, let's copy this. A V6 is actually a zip file. So we just rename it to zip. Let's go in. Let's copy out all this stuff. And then we can just create a new folder. Paste it in. And you can see here, we also have a package def from the file we did before. So by default, when you say file, file new project extensibility, V6 package or Visual Studio package, you have this automatically. You see, it adds menus. That was the menu button we had before. And it writes all this stuff to the registry. The one in Web Essentials is way bigger because it also registers all the settings, all the option pages that you saw before. It does a lot of other things. But I've created my own that does some extra stuff. I'm writing to the website project system, telling it to nest files under each other in Solution Explorer. It can all be done in the registry. So that's what's going on here. But here's a really funny thing that no one tells you. I had my V6. I opened it up as a zip file, and I copied all the content of the zip file in here. Okay? So this is the actual stuff. Now, my original V6 was 61 kilobytes. If I zip this thing up, then we're down to 31 kilobytes. So this is very, very strange. Web Essentials is 2 megabytes. When it's just compiled into a V6. Every time I do something, every time I upload a nightly build, I run a process that goes in and converts the V6 to a zip file, takes all the content and re-zips it, so it's only 700 kilobytes. So for some weird reason, Visual Studio doesn't actually compress your V6 files. But it's very easy to do it yourself. And this totally works. You just have to rename this guy. And we're back, and then you run it, and that's fine. Visual Studio completely understands it. So just a little tip. Okay. So let's look at what we actually have. This is my Visual Studio command table file. So this is for Web Essentials. So I have some menus, right? I have a menu up here, like Web Essentials. This is a menu when you have like a flyout going on. I have menus here, Web Essentials. A menu comes out. So that's what a menu is. So I create some menus. They all have parents. And I'm saying the parent of this guy is called something here with my menu group. I have no idea what it is. This is where it gets complicated. I do actually know where it is. But you see here all the menus. Then we have all the groups. The groups are the parents of everything. They should basically just have renamed groups to parent. And there's a lot of built-in groups. Here's one. I didn't recognize this. This comes from the C++ file that's kind of running all this. And V is menu build. Well, that's up here. That's this build menu. Oh, here we go. So some of this stuff is built-in. So my parent is my build menu for one of these things. And then I can create children, or I can create groups that has this as a parent. And then I can add my menus and buttons into those groups. And that's actually what's generating these lines. So this is one group. These four is one group, because there's no lines separating them, just as there is between these two. These two are separated by a line. So that means they're in two different groups. So it's kind of, that part is kind of intuitive. And I have a lot of groups. Okay, and then we have buttons. I also have a lot of buttons. But here's what I do. I'm saying dynamically visible or dynamic visibility. That means I can now go in and say, this button is not necessarily enabled or even visible. I can now go in and say, when people right-click somewhere where my button should be in that context menu, just before it's shown, is going to call into my C# code asking whether or not I should be visible or enabled or disabled. so I can control these things. And that's exactly what you see here. Here. Not everything is enabled. I kind of figure out whether or not it makes sense from what file I clicked on, what should be enabled, what should be disabled. So you can totally do that yourself. And we continue. There's a lot of buttons. A lot of buttons. And here's my key bindings. So all the commands, and that's what all of this is. It's a command. So you can actually call it through the command window, if you know what the command window is in Visual Studio. You can call all of this stuff. But here I add key bindings to it. Key bindings is always great, right? We love keyboard shortcuts. What's really difficult is to find a keyboard shortcut that's available. That is the trick. So I do some stupid stuff here. I say, well, you have to hold down Shift and Alt. Right? Not a, most of the Shift Alt are available. I think actually Control Alt Space or just Alt Space is available. I don't know why no one has taken that. That's a pretty good shortcut. You should write an extension that uses that. And then we have command placements. I can take all my buttons and menus and all that and distribute them to different locations within Visual Studio. So I can take my CSS command, which is a button or a menu in this case, and I can say, hey, add it to this parent, the JS editor. So that means if I right-click in the JavaScript editor, it shows up. So I have the same command in multiple places. And then we have all the symbols and GUIDs, and there's a lot. And this is so this is the hairy part. This is where you actually kind of have to follow the guide and see how things are implemented, because you need to do GUIDs and register GUIDs and so on. So that's how that works. What do you want to see in Web Essentials? Do you want to see any bugs? No? There's a big room. I assume you're here for something specific, perhaps. You have a problem. You have something I might be able to help out with, some general questions. Can we extend this? Why don't we have this feature? Why do we have another feature? So on. Localization, translation. Yes. Why don't we have that? Actually, this is funny. A year and a half ago, I created a project with a friend of mine who also works on the ASP.NET team. Where you could have a resx file, and you could right-click it, and it will machine translate into 36 languages. And it would, and the idea was, you do that, and that gives you enough translation. It's machine translation, so it's not perfect, right? But it gives you enough so that you can start testing your websites or your Windows Phone apps or whatever for German, for English, for Turkish, where you have like big variations in length of strings. And at the same time, you can send it out to a website, to the Bing website. They have an interface where you can actually invite people in to translate it, but you would have all the defaults that are already machine translated. When people then translate it, we can automatically sync it back in to your resx files. It was a brilliant, brilliant idea, and we had it in an internal technology kind of festival or whatever, and we showcased it, and we got a lot of interest. But then, and we worked with Microsoft Research to kind of finish it off, but that actually did not happen. If you go to github.com/LigerShark, you'll actually find the implementation there. So you can fork it and you can finish it. Yes. I hope to be able to finish it, but yeah. Okay. So I mentioned yesterday that we're able to update all the CSS schemas automatically without you having to do anything. You just get all the latest browser support, all the latest and greatest all the time. And this is magic. This is really difficult, isn't it? Let me show you exactly how difficult that is. If I can find it. Here we go. In the CSS editor, here's what I'm doing. I'm registering the CSS content type. This is basically just CSS. I have a shortcut. So this is CSS. Okay. And then I'm creating a text buffer listener. So every time I open a CSS file, I'm gonna run this code. And basically, on text buffer created, then I'm going to ask when my schema files was last updated. And that's what happens here. And I'm kind of testing for if it's over 3 days that I checked last time, well, then go out and check. And then we just go down here and we see, well, it's just XML, so we read some XML, and then we save it all to disk. So in case you're wondering where all the CSS comes from, it's right here. And that's basically it. 160 lines of code. And we store all the CSS files in the users, in the data of the user folder. So that's what we've been trying to do. Take all the extensibility out of the Visual Studio install path and put it into the user folder. So basically what it means is that you can just take some new schemas. I can send you a zip file with new CSS schemas or HTML schemas. And you don't have to touch the Visual Studio install directory, you know, under C program files Visual Studio. It goes under your C users and then my documents or whatever. And the power of that is really, really significant because you don't even have to write an extension. You just need to take the files that is already on disk. You can find all the CSS schema files and HTML, and you can change them to whatever you want, and then you can just copy them into your new folder or send them to someone else, and they can put it into their user folder, and this will automatically be picked up. And that's exactly how we do this. So the CSS schema updater basically just goes out online to a location I have and finds new schemas, and if there are any, it just puts them in that user folder, and that's automatically being picked up. We have not documented all this stuff. I'm working right now on documenting the entire CSS editor with the technical architects in Visual Studio. We're going to do the same for HTML, but probably not until maybe a year from now, because there is a lot of work in actually documenting these things, because the APIs have to meet a certain bar, if you know what I mean. They have to be good enough. I'm very confident that the CSS ones are, because I believe that I've probably tested the APIs more than any other API have been tested in Visual Studio. So I know they work. Okay. What else is interesting here? Let's keep to CSS, because as I told you, we didn't document any CSS APIs. But we do have them there, public. You can find them. Just reference the DLL, and you can party on them as you would like. They will be documented, but they're so good that they probably don't need to be documented, I would argue. So let's find some errors. So these are all the errors that I have. That's probably like, what, 15, 20 or something. So let's find an error. Here's one. So here's what I'm doing. I'm going to figure out in my CSS document what could be invalid, what is a bad practice to do. And one of them is if I have margin colon 0px, then the px is irrelevant. You should just remove it. This is not on by default, but you can enable it in the settings. But basically, it's very simple. I create a class that inherits from this guy, and I export it as well. And then it's very simple. I say, what type in my CSS am I interested in? Well, I'm interested in numerical values. This is a CSS parse tree item or node type. And I can totally get that. So every time the validator runs, and it runs in the background, it just calls in saying, hey, is there anyone listening to numerical values? And if there are, then call the check item method. And that's what it does. So I'm going to find all the numerical values. And then I'm going to cast it to a unit. And then it's very easy. If the number.text equals 0, right, and we're not dealing with unknown unit types, or we're not dealing with time, like seconds, which is a new CSS3 type, well, then we can start saying that this is a bad thing. And we can just add an error, a simple error tag. And we can add a error message. And that's all it is. And a simple error is basically this. It's the same error I use everywhere. So here I'm just going to figure out whether or not it's blah, blah, blah. It's exposed to users. That's it. I don't even use this. So we're going to include this as well. So you can very, very easily add all this stuff. And hopefully we're going to remove all the magic. Now here's what I'm going to do. And I'm trying to really hard to get Visual Studio and the entire ASP.NET team on board on this. What I want to do is I want to take over the file new extensibility project dialog. I want to create, and I need your help. I want to create a new project template, at least one, where all the references are there, where everything is hooked up the right way. So you can just say file new extensibility project. And then you want to add an item. Instead of figuring out online, how do you add a CSS validator? How do you add a SAML drag and drop handler? I'm going to have tons of item templates. So you can have your, you say file new project, extensibility project, and then you just say add new item. And that add new item dialog is going to be huge. There's going to be add CSS validator, add drag and drop handler, add whatever you can dream of, TypeScript, paste JSON as TypeScript interfaces, all that stuff. So that the only thing you need to do is to change the behavior to fit what you need. But in the entire hookup, all the MEF exports and imports and all that stuff is already taken care of. And my goal is I want to do all this open source. And I would really love if there was any contributions to that stuff. And so there is momentum going right now that we are going to do this. And if not, then I'm going to do that. I'm going to do that regardless, but I would love to have the entire backing of my team and Microsoft. And my team is, of course, on. This is ASP.NET. We're all about open source and ecosystem. So it's really important. And that's the reason why Sublime Text and TextMate and all these other IDEs are becoming really popular. They don't really have any features. They rely completely on extensibility. And there's hundreds of extensibility or plugins out there available. And I want to make sure that we can do the same in Visual Studio. It's really, really important to me. Because right now we have Web Essentials. We have productivity power tools. They're all kind of skunkworks projects. They're not fully supported or anything at all. But that's more or less it. The rest of the stuff is something that we pay for, ReSharper, for instance. And it's all great, but I would love to have someone to write the SAS editor for Visual Studio, or someone to write PHP, or you name it. All the features that we don't have, that we didn't even think of, would be fantastic if the ecosystem, if you guys, could write that. And the only way we can do that is if we try to make it super easy. And as you saw, I was just dragging in some files that I already wrote yesterday. But if I had to write that from scratch, I personally could not do that. Right? I don't remember that the interface is called iDrop Handler Provider. And how many attributes do I have? Is export enough, or do I need content type and all these other things? I cannot personally do that without looking online or previously written code. It's impossible. So there was a lot of ceremony that we had to go through. But you also see, as soon as you kind of understand some of it, it's actually not that difficult. It's the initial entrance into this world of V6 that's problematic. As soon as you're getting in there, you kind of get your head around MEF. As soon as you get your head around what is a package, what is the command table, that big XML file, how does that work? Then the door is completely open. You can do whatever you want. Then it's just your imagination. And a very trained skill in search engines for documentation. MSDN has all the documentations, but that's basically just the XML comments in the code that they expose. There are some blog posts here and there. I have a few, but there are some really good series out there. And it is problematic. It is really problematic. So that's why I want that we start to focus on the extensibility story. Not just for web stuff, but for everything. For WinForms, for SAML, for TypeScript, for whatever it is that you want, or just generic Visual Studio features. Why not have a Twitter feed that's relevant to what you're actually working on? Right? If I'm using some sort of command, why don't I have like a Twitter feed or search feed somewhere that could help me out? And what's the latest around this stuff? It's just a stupid example. But those are all the generic kind of things that you can also do. There really is no limitations. So, any questions? Yes. Are there any limitations, like can I write to the file system? Can I start a new process? There are only the limitations that you have when you're running Visual Studio. So you're running through the Visual Studio process. If you run as an admin, there's no problem. So Web Essentials by default, or any extension by default, does not install as admin. It's a per-user install. And you can see that right here. Somewhere. Here. the V6 is installed for all users. If you click this, you will be prompted saying, hey, do you want to install, you know, the, what's it called, UAC? It's going to pop up from Windows and say, are you sure you want to install this? And then it's just installed for all users, and that means you can run it in admin mode. But Web Essentials does not use this. And I start new processes. I call Windows script hosts. I do web requests out in the real world, and all of that works. I write to the file system. There's really no limits. You cannot write, I believe, to the install directory, to the C:\program files, because that's where you need to be an admin. But so you'd have to be an admin if you do that in Windows Explorer 2. So that's how you can kind of look at that. Another one? Yes. So the question is, if I download an extension, how can I know it's not evil? Like, how can I make sure that it doesn't format my hard drive or something like that? You cannot. There is no way of knowing it. There are, well, as I said, install the trusted ones. There's no difference. You go to a website and you download an .exe. You only run it from stuff, from places you trust. And that's the good thing about the gallery. Everything is rated. You can see how many people downloaded it. If a lot of people download it, it'll follow Twitter, search for it. If people like it, it's probably good. Maybe it's from an author you trust. But you can do really harmful things. I can delete the entire user folder. Yes, totally. I cannot delete anything in the program files folder. That's off limits. So there are maybe some concerns. Excuse me? Oh, yeah, so being an early adopter could be a bad thing. Well, if you're an early adopter, you probably have some interest or trust the people that are writing it. No, I've never heard of anything harmful in this regard. No. Yes? Can you extend the IntelliSense? Oh, yes. Oh, yes. You can definitely do that. I do that a lot of places. Sometimes it's easy, sometimes it's difficult. For CSS, it's really, really easy. So it's not representative. But you can not only can you change the IntelliSense, like what goes in it, you can change what it looks like. If you've seen in CSS that we have the color picker, right? When you're dealing with color, we have this full color wheel and all that stuff. That's IntelliSense. We wrote a SAML control that we put into the IntelliSense presenter. That's what it's a presenter. So we just injected a SAML control in there. You can do the same. We just used the same extensibility that you would use to extend IntelliSense, completely. All mouse hover, mouse over, tooltips, all that sort of stuff, completely extendable. Yeah. If I can show you? Yes. I can show you CSS because that's the easy one. So that would be completion. I can do filter. I can filter things out. But I think I want to look at... Here we go. ICSS completion list provider, simple interface. I'm looking for property values. And then I'm giving a context and some other stuff. And as IntelliSense is invoked, it looks at, am I right now showing property value in CSS? If it's a property value, this could be selector, simple selector, all this stuff. Then execute this stuff. And basically I just go through, I find my style sheet, which is the tree, the actual parsed tree. And then I'm just looking for all the keyframes. A keyframe is part of the new CSS3 animation. And then I filed all the names of the keyframes that I have. And then I just add those entries to the completion list. That's it. I can remove stuff. I do that already. WebEssentials, you don't ever see the property value inherit and initial because I think they're annoying. And I very rarely use them. So you can remove stuff as well. Super, super simple. This is the only editor that has this simplicity. If you want to do it for the other ones, you have to write a lot more classes, but you can totally do it. Yes. All IntelliSense is based on a session. So you're talking about a completion session. And you can kind of hijack your way into the session and do all the stuff you need, but you need a little bit more hooks. It's not as simple as this. All right, well, Let me just, for the fun of it, we have 5 minutes, so let me just see if I'm online. It would be kind of cool to show you how to actually publish this to the real world. I doubt it. Okay, so here's what I'm going to do instead. I'm going to record a video where I take what we have as we leave it right here, and I'm going to record a video of how I upload it, and I'm going to put the code as well, and I'm going to add the whole thing to my blog, and I'm going to tweet that on the Tech Days NL, so you can get all the code and you can get everything here. So I hope that's okay since we don't have internet right now. So with that, thank you very much.